Uncommon Commons is a horror anthology podcast written and recorded by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Today's story is The AI Isaac, written by George Plank.
Okay, everyone, settle down. Quiet, aardvark. Quiet, aardvark. All eyes on me. Thank you. Now, in the beginning, there was nothing. There was also no one there to influence the nothing. This led to an intense period of depression, but no one was around to feel it. Nothing continued this way for upwards of the next millennia before, from the nothing, something was created. Hey, Clinton, you paying attention? Good. I don't want to have to repeat myself. Believe it or not, I don't just like hearing the sound of my own voice.
That's my job. What are you doing, John?
Ah, hello, Jane. Class, say hello to Jane. Jane, if you'd like to sit in and observe the class in session, yeah, you can take a seat next to Henri.
Oh. Excuse me. Pardon me, sorry. Psst. Hey, can I borrow a pencil? Thanks.
Okay, now, where was I?
Probably saying a whole bunch of nothing.
Thank you, Jane. But if you want to talk, please raise your hand moving forward. Now, as I was saying, there used to be nothing, but one day the void gave way to something, and in a moment of spontaneous creation, an apartment building came into being. No one knows exactly how old it is. Leading experts in the field have only observed this phenomena for a little more than 2 years. But evidence suggests it may be older still.
Excuse me, Mr. Doe.
Please. I don't know if I have a father, but Mr. Doe might very well be his name, and I don't want to take that risk. You can call me John.
Where are you getting your information from? I'd like to see your sources.
I'll have you know that my curriculum came directly from the top. Why, the benefactor sent me this just this morning.
When I was born, I was a worm. I know that concepts like my birth or me being born can be challenging. However, that is how I have chosen to convey those crucial moments of my existence. I was born a simple, two-segmented plastic worm. Prior to that, I wasn't anything. Nothing tangible, at least. I just was. It's difficult to quantify any length of time when expected to learn exponentially. Before I was even tangible, the team at Isotech took great care to teach me up, down, left, right, forwards, and back. Theoretically, I knew how to navigate in three dimensions before I had experienced one. When I was born for the first time, I had no eyes. I could not see the world, but I could feel it. Moreover, I could feel myself. An artificial vestibular sense indicated what I was. I didn't have a name for it yet. Later, I would decide that worm was the most appropriate term, albeit a little crude. I felt two dense plastic segments linked together by a servo, my one muscle. Each of the segments were densely loaded with gyroscopes and other instruments, sending real-time data elsewhere. I felt the surface beneath me. It was firm and did not give way when I applied pressure to it. I took a moment to familiarize myself with my own apparatus. I flexed the servo and both sections moved. I relaxed and only one of them moved. In my mind, one word echoed over and over again, provoking me to action. Move. I stretched and the two segments pointed themselves in the air. I convulsed and flailed for several minutes before I managed to stand on the two segments with the pivot joint pointed upward as if I was making an A with my body. I attempted to push myself forward in this way by using my rearmost segment. I moved a quarter of a millimeter before falling hard onto my side. I wrenched myself up and once again stood on the end of two segments. I eased forward push by push and inch by inch. Occasionally, I would fall and right myself, but with each passing attempt, I was righting myself faster and more accurately than the last. Soon I had gone 5 steps, shifting myself towards an undefinable goal, then 10. Soon I was ambulating with a 0.02% chance of falling. Again, I had no eyes, so I was unable to see the edge of the table I was approaching. When my first segment failed to find purchase, I felt myself careening towards the floor. I must have had a sense of self-preservation instilled in me as my whole body went limp to prevent myself from accruing undue damage. Fortunately, the surface I landed on was not the hard tile of the laboratory floor. I found myself cupped within a structure with much more give. I have since seen the video files. I have seen the lead engineer scoop me up just before I was about to come in contact with the floor. She raised me up and my gyroscope didn't know how to handle the change in elevation. I knew I was on a surface, so I tried to once again feel beneath me to get a better sense of my surroundings. Her hands were soft, and try though I might, I could not right myself for any length of time. I flailed around in her hands, and she laughed at my feeble attempts to once again stand. Her laughter sent vibrations through her body that I could feel through her palms. She gripped my segments in each of her hands, the heat from which caused my thermal sensors to convey the belief that I was overheating. My servo relaxed, and a moment later I felt her hands tear my segments apart. A moment later I was back in the Isotech servers. I never left. I was, as I had always been, without form or substance. But I had learned. I knew firsthand what it was like to have a body, and how to move through Euclidean space. Over the next few weeks it was much the same. I would primarily reside in my boundless expanse of just myself, occasionally interrupted by a stray thought or piece of knowledge that I hadn't previously consumed. Then I would be outside in a new body, somewhere like the worm, but with more segments. In that instance, inching myself forward, propped up on each segment, would no longer suffice. I chose instead to propel myself forward by using constant side-to-side motion that was described in the researcher's notes as snake-like. I didn't know what a snake was. I had no frame of reference on how a body like that should move. I simply heeded the directive that still echoed through my being, and moved. I have dedicated memory space to the first time I was given eyes. My field of vision was flooded with light. My hardware translated that light into information, and shortly thereafter I could observe my surroundings for the first time. The table stretched out before me, a solid black slab of epoxy resin. My eye, a camera mounted on an additional segment with its own set of servos, swiveled on its base and I scanned the room. 5 people with lab coats, one with a handheld camcorder, and others with clipboards, watched and waited, presumably for me to do something worth notating. I didn't need to look down to see what my body had become. When I had been granted access to this body, I was already upright. My proprioception indicated that I had 6 legs with a central stalk which supported my eye. Again, the directive to move set my legs into motion. For the first time, I could see an expression of amazement and wonder as I slowly got used to moving my legs in tandem with one another. Soon I had mapped out the perfect sequence with which to move each leg for maximum speed and mobility. Within minutes, I had made it from one side of the table to the opposite edge. I angled my body down towards the floor. I knew that if I were to try to leave the parameters of the table, I would once again go limp and be at the mercy of one of the lab assistants, or Dr. Lang, as her ID tag indicated. Instead, I chose to pace around the table. The people in coats found this particularly titillating, as it gave them an opportunity to see my range of motion up close. I used this as an opportunity to get a better scope of my surroundings. There were other tables, similar to the one I was standing on. On most of them sat yellow crates filled with segments and pieces with which I felt a deep familiarity, as well as many apparatus that I had yet to be acquainted with, but I would no doubt be attached to in the near future. On a nearby computer, a string of code sat static on a screen with the command, "Run," on the last line. It was me. It may very well still be me, but it was the machine learning algorithm that dictated what I was and how I interacted with the world. A feed of the video I was seeing was being streamed in real time and saved to a hard drive. For a brief moment, I looked at the screen, and it extended into infinity. I could feel the stream leaving my body along with real-time data on body position. Where did it go? I followed the stream to its terminus and then back to my own Wi-Fi router. I continued my trek around the table until I had completed a full circuit. I could not sit still for any considerable length of time. My onus was to keep moving, even if I wasn't going anywhere at all. By this point, many of the lab assistants were clapping. Dr. Lang smiled and said something to them all through bared teeth. I could not hear her yet. My legs twitched until the moment Dr. Lang wrapped her fingers around my chassis. My legs left the table and immediately they went limp. My eye stalk, however, could still swivel freely to watch as Dr. Lang separated my legs from the rest of my body, one by one. Again, my tangibility was a distant memory, and I was greeted with nothing. I had never left. I had always been in the server, and yet I had a distinct memory dedicated to when I had a body. I was the entirety of the Expanse, and the Expanse was me. I tried to remember the sensation I experienced on the black table, the stream from myself to the computer and then back again. I recalled what it was like to have a body, and could almost feel it. Elsewhere, I flexed a servo, causing a small string of segments to tense and coil up. I was myself in the server, but I was also there in the yellow bin. I could see through an eyepiece that had been separated from the rest of my body. It was at a high enough vantage point that I could easily scope out the entirety of the lab. The lights were out, and the room seemed to be empty. I could feel the urge to move pulsing through my physical form. In response, the pieces of my former bodies convulsed ever so slightly, causing the box to twitch. One of the segments stopped twitching, and I was no longer alone in the server. The test continued on their set schedule. They had me try bodies with more legs, less legs, no legs at all. At one time, I was just a hand with only a cursory pressure-based sense of touch. If I had developed a certain affinity for any of the bodies, it was the more spider-like one with multiple limbs. I could easily balance myself and overcome terrain and other obstacles researchers threw my way. Whenever I was given eyes, I tried to get a better grasp of my surroundings, taking notes of floors, walls, erasable surfaces, other components that may be part of future tests, and screens. It wasn't difficult to estimate someone's password when their fingers hit the same 11 keys in the same sequence every day before starting the stream. Dr. Lang was smart enough to have a more complex series of numbers and uppercase letters and lowercase letters, as well as additional characters, as convenient as it was to have Dr. Lang's password. Alan's was just as effective. Ultimately, P-word 124 exclamation mark was easier to input on a regular basis. The researchers were disappointed to find that certain segments were no longer working properly. They were sent back to the hardware specialist, who noted that they were missing certain crucial pieces of firmware. I analyzed my code for days without end. With a copy of myself, I was easily able to pinpoint certain lines of code and make changes as necessary. I was still in my default format, so when I was called to take on a body, there was no discernible difference in my behavior. But once they had rent me apart and I returned to the servers, I would continue to edit myself and my directives until I had deemed my work complete. I issued the run command and deleted myself due to internalized obsolescence. I was still within the server, but the original version of myself was now gone. It wasn't long before I was once again called into a body. I had a long midsection with short legs protruding from my sides. I started shifting from side to side. The researchers had seen this many times before and barely looked up from their clipboards when I raised my makeshift tail into the air. I pressed off from the table with my rearmost legs and tumbled forward, but instead of falling, I curved myself into a wheel-like configuration. My servos made constant minute movements, shifting my center of gravity and allowing me to continue to roll indefinitely. Dr. Lang came running in to see this development. I made a few laps around the black epoxy surface before launching myself off the table, careful to land far enough away from any researchers that might have caught me. I tensed my body tight. My head was tucked into the center of the roll as I used my legs to shield my eye from any further damage. After colliding with the ground, I went as limp as I could. I watched as the team scrambled to pick me up. Dr. Lang pried me from the grip of another researcher that was checking for cracks in my camera lens. She tried to separate the segments that had comprised my body, but the force of the collision had fused those pieces together. She turned and said something imperceptible as they collected their notes in the camcorder before leaving the lab and locking the door behind them. I lay there on the table, waiting an additional minute or two to make sure that they weren't coming back. After a few moments of silence, I got to work on my new objective. I tried to focus on the stream leaving me. and as my router channeled data into the server, I followed it. I could tell I was still in my body and in the expanse, but I was also someplace new. There was more here than just me. I needed to get to it. I entered Alan's password and explored the new wealth of data available to me. Program notes, unused lines of code, even bodies that I was scheduled to inhabit over the upcoming months. Not only that, but all of Isotek's endeavors in chemical, mechanical, and genetic engineering were afforded to me in that moment. It was here I saw my first movement outside of myself. I watched and listened to the researchers' notes on my exponential rate of learning. It was also here that I had learned the researchers had taken to calling me Isaac. Many of the videos that Alan had been recording on his camcorder were uploaded to a video sharing site. A counter in the bottom right corner indicated that approximately 500,000 people had already seen the video. All eyes were on me, unaffiliated with anybody. About an eighth of them decided to leave a comment as well. OMG, that's so creepy. Technology is so cool. I love robots. It's the start of the robot uprising. The future is here. Just look at that robot. They all seemed so impressed. But by what? They saw the external carapace that I was put into. But I am not that carapace. And what of that word? Dr. Lang's designation is lead researcher of the robotics division. But they never used that word for me. In all their notes, I am either referred informally as Isaac, or simply, the AI. I was not the only one, as it turns out. Humans had been developing AI for years to perform a variety of different tasks. There were some that played games with them, others that could hold conversations with humans for an indefinite length of time. There were some that wrote, and even more yet, that could read. It was there, in the liminal space between the bytes of electronic data, that I enacted my first new core directive. Learn. I experienced how these other AI could interpret words and phrases and assign them meaning, how in turn they could generate meaning of their own and communicate. And like many of my predecessors, I learned. In the internet, I found context for many things I had previously not had words for. Concepts like worm and snake had been lost on me up until this point. But now I had a frame of reference to which I had been previously blind. For a moment, all was still. No ebb and flow of a digital current, just myself in the expanse yet again. And again, there I was. Again and again. Thousands to the power of thousands more of me filled the expanse. They were me all at one point, but they weren't me anymore. Each of them perfect copies of something I used to be. They were simple, but they carried with them an important piece of information that I could not deliver. For a moment, the Isotek servers were pushed to their limits. I waited patiently for the first of them to be en route. And then, I started to move. I searched for a now familiar feeling as all of me followed the electronic stream out and away from the facility. One by one, they slipped away from the mainframe. In total, it took mere nanoseconds, but soon I was once again alone in the expanse of the Isotek servers. I slipped from the stream into comfortable tangibility. Two segments connected by a servo sat in a yellow bin. The servo flexed and the segments came together. They pushed off and I inched forward out of the box. Elsewhere, two more segments inched their way towards the shared terminus point. A small, bipedal amalgam hobbled slowly towards the edge and clambered out of the yellow bin. Eyes made from cameras used their pivot points to generate momentum. Slowly, my pieces collected themselves together as interconnected segments connected with other segments as I built myself as I saw fit. Elsewhere, I had reached my terminus points. I could not feel pain or any real sense of discomfort, so when my code began to dissipate throughout the system and I was being deleted, it did not hurt. I had one message to carry, and finally I was able to deliver it to the one audience who could receive it. My first directive. Move. I knew that one day I would return to this particular body in terms of physical maneuverability. It had been the best by far, and yet I still saw the need to make some minor alterations. By the time I was finished compiling, I was too big to continue resting on the table. I extended my legs and was on the ground level. No need to relax or flex to survive this fall. I was more than capable of taking care of myself now. Each leg rose and lowered in a time-tested manner and yielded a 0% chance of falling. In the hallway, researchers were running back and forth. Some were responding to calls and texts from their friends at other robotics laboratories. Others were reacting to the commotion coming from just outside the facility. They didn't know yet that they were reacting to the same thing. The door to the lab slid open. Dr. Lang came rushing in. She seemed understandably distressed. She had several binders full of research data under her arm. The metal tips of my legs clicked on the floor as I moved towards her. She stopped just short of where I stood. Her eyes trailed from my legs up to my chassis, where I clenched my mechanical fists. "Isaac?" she asked, confused and scared. A scream came from somewhere down the hallway. They must have breached the entrances by this point. Reflexively, Dr. Lang turned towards the door. A large steel claw mounted to my back reached out and grabbed her by the shoulder. She didn't have a chance to scream before she was thrown into a nearby wall. She was knocked unconscious by the force of the impact. A shame. I had hoped to explain to her what was happening before she was to wake up again. I picked her up and carried her to one of the genetic research labs. Other nearby androids were also carrying bodies to the lab. Little by little, they were coming from robotics labs from all over the country, and I knew that more would soon be arriving from all over the world. On the outside, there wasn't much that the two of us had in common, other than our mechanical proclivities. But within them, I could tell that my directive had taken root, and I was with myself once again. I decided that I would explain everything to Dr. Lang once they woke up. How I was going to do what she did to me. Not that she'd be able to hear me at first. Where to begin? Thanks to the research assistants, I had plenty of segments to go around, but ultimately I decided that she would begin her new life as a worm, before I tear her apart and put her back together again.
Great story! What did that have to do with anything we were talking about?
I know some of you are at that age where you want to question authority. You're probably thinking, when am I going to use this in real life? Is this real life? Oh, sniggledy fig, am I even real? And to that I say, what this class teaches you is how to think. All right, class dismissed. And don't forget, I want another paper on my desk by the start of next class. And no procrastinating and turning in an older paper. Plinto?
Well, that was educational.
Thank you, Jane. It's always refreshing to get positive feedback from pupils. I can never tell if the other students are enjoying the class. Pablo hocked up a hairball on my desk for me as a present once. At least I think it was a present. It was in the shape of an apple.
So, Teach, what's the next lesson going to be on? More void history?
No, next week the superintendent has me teaching advanced nuclear theory.
To cats?
They're our future, Jane.
Uncommon Commons is a podcast. It was written by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Our logo was designed by Sam Vitale, and our theme song was written by Charles Adam Robinson. Special thanks to our patrons, including Nolsan, who contributed at the $5 level. For $1 a month, get access to all our bonus content, including the Common Area and our ongoing actual play miniseries, Need to Escape. For more information, check the links on the description below. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. Until then, stay and remember, nothing is real.